more, so many people are leaving the state of California just to get out and get a fresh start at a new state. And they're seeing the errors of some previous politics they might have been part of and going, this is crazy. I didn't sign up for this, man.
Hey guys, check out the 2023 Street Cop Conference, April 23rd through the 28th, Gaylord Convention Center. It's going to be the event of the year. Keynote speakers include Rob O'Neill, the guy who killed Bin Laden, Kyle Carpenter, the youngest living Medal of Honor recipient, Navy SEAL Jason Redman, Fox News host Tommy Lahren, Marine Corps Special Forces and Leadership Coach Cody Alford, Sheriff Wayne Ivey, Sheriff David Clark, and Sheriff Mark Lamb. It's going to be one hell of an event. And on top of that, we have all of our instructors and additional instructors from other companies going to be at the event, giving you everything they know for you to have a successful career and get the results you want to get in the field as a police officer. On top of attending the event, you'll get face-to-face time with every instructor attending the event, and all the keynote speakers will spend time with you. We got special events all week, giveaways, nightlife. It's going to be really, really worth your time, energy, and effort. I promise you, you will not regret it for a second. To register for the conference, check out streetcop.com, click conference, and everything you need will be there on the homepage. If you are looking for a room, just click book a room. The block has been sold out at the Gaylord Opryland Convention Center, but there are many hotels nearby within a walking distance of the event. You don't want to miss out on this opportunity. We will see you there.
111, 110. You trying to be a street cop?
Hey guys, welcome to this episode of the Street Cop Training Podcast. I'm your host, founder, and CEO of Street Cop Training. My name is Dennis Bonino, and we have with us today returning guest, a famous, if you watch TV, and you might see John Norris. He's on several episodes of a show that he'll tell you about. I've seen, that's how I remember when we first met. I recognize you from that show immediately.
Right.
What the hell's the name of the show?
Wild Justice, man. That's the early TV days of reality TV for game wardens in California. Was National Geographic's Wild Justice. We did three seasons of that crazy show. And ran all over the state of California doing just about every wildlife crime you can imagine, and a lot of non-wildlife crimes too, Dennis, which was pretty interesting, pretty different, you know, to work with a film crew for that type of content. But it was good for the agency, good for recruitment, and just good for awareness. So glad we did it.
You know what? I just didn't want to get it confused with like Northwoods Law and all the other shows that are out now. And I watch them while I get sucked into them. I don't know why I find the game warden side of law enforcement so interesting. I think it's just something you don't really see, but it's really fucking cool.
Well, you know, it's something people need to kind of be aware of, even if they're not really outdoorsy or hunt or fish or any of that. Because as you know, like we talked about in the first episode together on your good show here, I mean, wildlife crimes are everywhere. And the other thing that's so interesting is game wardens are sworn to do everything a street cop's sworn to do and certified to do. And now, with as crazy as the country's become, game wardens are doing public safety crimes, health and safety, drug crimes, interdiction crimes on the roads, you know, you name it, traffic stops. We do it all. But our emphasis, of course, is, you know, protecting our wildlife resources and people from raping and pillaging the woods, if you will, in waterways.
I don't think anybody in the law enforcement community ever saw game wardens as not being cops. In my mind, game wardens were always police officers. I have friends that are game wardens. Even before I was a cop, I knew that game wardens were cops. People are terrified of game wardens too. You'd hear that a lot.
Well, we're kind of sneaky, right? We're kind of showing up and sneaking in on the edge of creeks and having to be kind of stealthy, because the people that do wildlife crimes intentionally are usually doing it in remote areas. They're usually looking over their shoulder, and a lot of them are pretty skilled at getting away with it. So a lot of sneak and peek, a lot of field craft stuff that makes the, you know, that part of the job really unique. And you know, you mentioned game wardens being cops kind of being game wardens. I go back to guys on, you know, the Thin Blue Line that were doing wildlife crime enforcement with me all the time. Our county sheriffs, San Jose Police Department, when I started getting into the tactical world of SWAT and snipers and, you know, special operations, a lot of those operators on conventional city police departments and sheriff's departments were all big wildlife guys. They hunted, they fished, they took their kids outdoors, they camped. So they wanted to go do our type of work. And it was really cool to have that force multiplier and run around with our local agencies, because, you know, You know this better than anybody, Dennis. We are just the Thin Blue Line, the Thin Green Line, however you want to phrase it. We're just low on numbers no matter where we go. And there's more challenges now for law enforcement as a whole throughout America, with everything that's happened since lockdowns with the pandemic, you know, a flooded border now with a lack of border control, cartels running all over the country. I mean, crime's escalating because of all those changes and our numbers aren't really going up. So we're kind of doing it all with you guys. And it's a good thing that we are.
Recently, somebody from California sent me a new order that, I don't know, LAPD or somebody is not responding to a certain type of call. And they're only responding to other types of calls. So if you look at the list, I think at the inception, I think we're all appalled that, like, oh my God, we're not going to these calls anymore. But I got to be honest with you, as a cop, or when I was a cop, the amount of good, valuable time that was sucked up on stupid shit, right, especially with the technology today, I actually think one thing that people can start to do to try to fix our low enrollment numbers, besides getting better enrollment, behaving properly, attracting the right people, leadership, all these things that we want to see, better pay, all that stuff. That's important, right? But, you know, if you have 10 guys or girls to work with, they're probably just better off being used when they actually need them. So, you right. know, a lot of agencies have gone to online reporting. You want to report that somebody hit your fence, go online, fill out the form. You want to report that your neighbor was a dick to you, right? Go online, fill out the form. You want to record that somebody's dog was barking loud and it kept you up. Take your phone out, record it, submit it, and upload documents. You'll have your report. You can go. And maybe the third time an officer gets sent out to issue the complaint summons. There's just so much stupid shit that we do that I think a lot of it really can be handled online and without the police, as nuts as it sounds. I think you should leave the cops at a very minimum out there with their eyes on the road, eyes on businesses. I'd rather see cops being proactive than being reactive. You know, like, you get these people who are like, I need to report my identity was stolen in Bangladesh. Okay, well, listen, here's the list of things you need to do. It's right on our website. Fill out your report. I mean, these local police departments aren't looking into Bangladesh. They put up so many obstacles for us to try to figure out who these people are. Yeah, it's just a big waste of time. So, you know, you got to tie up a cop for 45 minutes to an hour on something that we can't do anything with. There's nothing we can do. Even if we were the victims of it, there's nothing we could do. Right. If that happened to me, I know what I'm not going to. I mean, I'll call the police, but I'll say, like, don't send a guy out here. I just want to report it somewhere. Just so you guys have it. So, you know, if there's a trend, you know how often it's being hit. If you're going to start dedicating some task force style shit to this, because it's a real significant problem. I get that. But there are so many things that your car got hit, right? But it's not damage that's significant, you know, in a parking lot. I don't know. And again, I don't want people to say, like, well, Matt, you could investigate. I get it. I'm just saying, there's just, if we looked at the amount of calls that we get, boys and girls, we could probably really do a lot more with our time than making cops go out and be basically reporters. That's all they are. I would tell people, like, I want to report on this. I'm like, you telling me this and me putting in paper, does it make it any more official than it actually happening?
Right, right. And Dennis, you said it best when you said proactive versus reactive and responding to call after call, report after report. One of the hardest things for me through my career, especially based out of the Silicon Valley, was being able to break loose and do proactive patrol, you know, and go and be in the community. And, you know, in the cities, we think of the community-oriented police model of interacting with businesses and looking for crime and working with informants. And when you're just taking these, you know, non-property, quote-unquote victimless crimes, non-aggravated violent crime reports, it just bogs everything down. And you're right. As long as somebody's not being hurt or it's something that's not going to be hindered, you know, through the investigation process, why not do it online? You know, why not use technology to the best of our advantage? Because again, our numbers are low overall when you look at per capita through the entire country, whether it's police officers to populations in cities, how game wardens fare in a particular state, our numbers are just dwindling. So, yeah, and that's certainly a challenge we on the game warden front have, is getting out there and doing enough proactive patrol, because that's the only way we can be effective. Just, you know, cruising a shoreline for illegal fishermen when you're taking call after call and not really getting into the sticks to find heavy wildlife crimes, hardcore intentional poaching, commercialization of wildlife, the ivory trade. And then, of course, what we started to specialize in on the special ops side of going after cartels with the toxically tainted cannabis for the black market they're producing. And now we know those same cartels are doing the, you know, the fentanyl production in dirty labs, which, as you guys have been highlighting in some reports and I've been working on both in documentaries and other factions, is just this fentanyl crisis that these idiots are responsible for. And the hundreds of thousands of deaths that have blown up nationally, and the human trafficking issue, it's finally starting to get some widespread attention we need on what those same criminal groups are doing. And we need to be out tackling that type of stuff as much as possible, obviously, because it's widespread.
You know, I think people would argue that, well, what if you had this and you could solve that and that happened to this? Yeah, I get it. Like, we're right. All playing this probability versus possibility game. And in business, but even in law enforcement, if we're going to talk about it for this, the game is probability. I mean, anything's possible. You could, but I would, this is where I go with a lot of my theories on tickets. I really, people get very upset when I start to criticize tickets. Oh, this guy hates tickets. I hate tickets when there are things like John just talked about to be done. Right. When you're eating up your time, tickets just, when you're eating up your time doing traffic enforcement, and typically traffic enforcement isn't the most egregious violations. You're setting up somewhere, you're spending your 4 hours, you're doing selective enforcement, you're picking it for 11 over the speed limit plus in this area. Right. I'm not saying the school zone stuff. I'm talking about you just being a fucking pain in the ass on the highway somewhere. You know, there's just so much more we can do with our time, energy, and efforts. And we're getting to a point now as a profession where we're going to have to start having a conversation about how are we spending our time. And you're going to have chiefs of police and mayors and these politicians saying, like, because they're 100% directly responsible for where we're at now. All these people are. The one thing that I think is dissuading people from becoming police officers is the lack of support that it appears like from the community, because we know communities still support the police.
Right.
It's they're watching these nightmare stories from the politicians, the chiefs of police, of non-support. So they know that's a dangerous job to begin with. They would love to do it, but they're afraid that if they have to do something, they don't want to end up like some of these people that they're seeing. You know, and they're not wrong to think some of that stuff, but we have to try to fix it, which might be an impossible task. There's got to be a lot of things changed. And I think prioritizing what we do as police officers is one of them. I think it really is. And I think people really have this awakening when they just hear our perspective on it. You know, if you only knew tickets and running random plates, what would you do? Oh, this is police work. We get good results. I write tickets. I'm speeds, kills. Like, just stop, guys. Stop telling yourself this fairy tale story and just learn how to combat human trafficking. Because I got to tell you, if you forfeited the Smooth Operator Award for the Human Trafficker Award, the guy who brought or the girl who brought in more victims of human trafficking, oh, man, I'll be at your fucking party before I'm at the fucking Smooth Operator Award party. Could you imagine the impact you're having on lives? You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, it's 100%. And that's the thing when we talk about recruitment and retention, right, for the next generation of cops, of game war, just everybody doing law enforcement throughout America, is I know when I signed up, but I'm going to date myself way back in the early 90s when I got that, you know, that green light to go to the academy, got into a limited slot to get the job and started off. I wasn't thinking of just writing a ton of quota tickets. Right. I was thinking, hey, I want to bust real poachers. I want to get guys spotlighting deer at night. I want to get guys taking massive over limits of fish. I want to get guys way back in the woods that are kind of doing this and thumbing their nose at law enforcement because they know they're behind locked gates and can get away with whatever they want as far as wildlife crimes go. And then when you start getting into ticket quotas and writing those, you know, those infractions, those traffic tickets, those low end administrative violations, man, they just sap you. They sap you within a year or two of the start of your career. And I know, I mean, Dennis, you know, we all got to get those skills to ride a ticket safely, to do a traffic stop safely with positioning and officer safety and all the protocols we do. But you're just not going to, I don't think you're going to keep people in the profession if they really want to make a difference and they want to exercise a challenge and go after big crimes. And that structure, like you just said, needs to be focused on from the get-go so that we keep people in the job, man. Because I can't tell you how many people I saw leaving city police departments in the Silicon Valley, where I'm from, sheriff's office, even leaving a game warden job because they were doing so much urban type quota ticket writing. It was not the job they envisioned, and it just wasn't a challenge. It wasn't inspiring. And they left the profession. They were very bright, very motivated, very ethical, very honest, just great people we want to keep on the force. And we lose them to that. So I think you said it perfectly. And we need to focus on these bigger crimes, you know, and what's happening when we just mentioned the traffickers, the cartels, you know, aggravated felonious behavior that's going on out there. That's the people we got to target. And if it takes a month to make that stop or that capture and you forego a couple of traffic citations, then I think that's an obvious trade off.
Cops just want to be cops.
That's it, man.
They just do. People don't understand the psychology of the men and women who are attracted to this. They want to go out and do cop shit. That's why they take the fucking job.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you go to work and you're getting bogged down with nonsense all day long. Hey, go upstairs and go sit in the courtroom for 4 hours for municipal court. There's a, you know, you come to work. Hey, you're doing the town meeting tonight. Right. Like, what do you mean doing a town meeting? They need security in there. So go up there. You and this guy are going to stand in the town meeting. If somebody gets out of line, you throw them out.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and then, you know, you're in that town meeting. You're hearing about, you know, fortunately enough, Mr. Norris, I never had to do a town meeting thing, but I have been asked to do plenty of things that I didn't want to do. And again, I'm willing to do those things, but think about what we're doing with the resources when we say, go do this, go do these dumb things. And I, you know, I often wonder now that I'm thinking about it, how people slip through the cracks of wanting to be cops, becoming cops, and then not wanting to be cops anymore. You know, like right. In my head, I think of these people who like get on the job, seem eager, and then as soon as they're on the job, they want to find their way to doing the least amount of work possible.
Yeah, there's that negative side too, and the people that kind of get out of the profession for those reasons. It's kind of like if you're going to be a slug, man, good riddance, because there is way too much to do and way too few of us to do it to not be motivated out there and give 100% in whatever, you know, whatever window you're going to work. And it's funny when you mentioned the town hall situation, it's like if I'm going to be at a town hall meeting, you know, as security and you're the law enforcement officer, you're a sheriff, you're a police officer, you're the game warden for that community, you should be talking at that town hall meeting, right? You should be talking to your constituents. You should be getting into what's really going on from a crime standpoint. What are the concerns of your public and making a difference and building that relationship, not being a security guard necessarily. I know that has to happen, but I think it could happen somewhere else. And that's the difference. You know, that's what I always gravitated towards. And what was really cool about the game warden profession is how close we are to our community and our public, because we're living out, you know, we're based out of the house. We've got the patrol car, the office, everything's right from the home. So we can be right in our community, especially in the rural communities. Now that certainly changes when you get to the big cities. And, you know, that's why you have some of those game wardens leaving the job because they're doing city work all the time. And they're doing not really the traditional game warden work they thought they were going to be doing. But no, that's the connection we want to have with our communities and put a cop where he or she belongs, right?
You know, I often wonder why some of the people like you and I and the maybe a couple thousand other people who actually have some real resolution to fix a lot of this stuff aren't the ones in charge. Yeah. You can just think about that stuff all day. You know, why aren't we the guys and the girls making these calls when we know the exact solve to these things? And the answer is, in some sense, everybody's got their little piece of the pie. And you know this game. Nobody wants to give up their spot on the playground. Yeah, and they don't play nice, right? This I always would tell people, like, what's law enforcement like? I'm like, you know, amongst like the higher, I go, it's like everybody has imagine a children's playground, and typically on a children's playground you have slides and monkey bars and jungle gyms and swings. You ever go to a children's playground when somebody's on a swing and another kid's waiting? I'm like, but yeah. I want my turn. No, go somewhere else. This is my swing. Come on, JoJo, you've been on the swing for 25 minutes. I want to go on it. No, because once you've got it, you don't want once you've got it, you don't want to give it up. And that's how these people behave. They're like little children because they're not willing to forfeit for the better good. It's all a big selfish game. You know, I'm sitting here trying to understand that still.
Well, I think when you asked, you know, people making decisions and setting policy and programs and what our objectives are going to be in a particular agency or even at the highest level, you know, of government for our nation, for protecting our borders, for protecting our domestic security, for protecting our wildlife in California, let's say. And I always gravitate back to some of the mentor leaders that I mentioned in all my books that came from the ground with us. They started off as, you know, complete meat eaters, complete pipe hitter game wardens. They were exemplary at their career. They were grinding and they came up through the trenches. And fortunately, a handful of them made it to chief of the agency or even deputy director under the governor. And man, we made some real headways in really getting after poachers. We made some real headways. Well, even the marijuana enforcement team that we were blessed to build and develop and form up that unit that Hidmore both additions go into, that was because we had Mike Carrion, an amazing leader that was chief of patrol for 2 years in a very adversarial political climate in the state of California. And he worked miracles to make that happen and give us a green light to build that unit. And that was all because of his background and his belief in us as operators and knowing our career histories, because he had mentored many of us, me included. And when we don't have leadership like that, we kind of fail before we start, right? And now we're up against policies, we're up against bad laws, we're up against laws that incentivize a black market, say like in California with cannabis, and the cartels are out of control in Cali, and now they're going to other states because of bad policy. And basically we're, you know, kind of hogtying and crippling all these dedicated law enforcement officers from every agency that want to go out and stop these guys. But there's actually laws and policy from politicians and lawmakers that were never in the field. They were never risking their lives to protect the public. They've never been dirty. They've never been in a fight. They've never had to go fisticuffs on anybody that's that violent and wants to do harm to our public. And that's the problem when you're in those leadership roles. And we've been fighting, you and me both, man, and all our brothers in blue and green and sisters around us have been fighting that battle since day one. And I just hope that all the good work you're doing on this podcast and through street cop training and what I'm trying to do on the same realm is send the message as much as possible and maybe shake some trees, you know, and get somebody to make some changes. And I mean, it's the best we can do at this point. At least we have a voice to do it. And I feel very fortunate that we do get to spread the word as much as possible and try to turn the tide a little bit, you know.
I am very hopeful. And I honestly believe that we are on a upswing as a,
yes,
as a profession. I think that people are catching on to it. I think the right people, you got Gen Xers and millennials now moving into high level command positions,
yep,
that are not, you know, romantic with the past. They understand change has to happen. They embrace technology.
Yes.
I think there's a lot of literature and visuals, whatever you want to call it, education around what leadership, sure, is. I think we're setting precedent. So although there may be a little bit of change currently, what I do like is the fact that in 5 weeks from recording this program, we'll have our second annual, well, it's not annual. So it was our second Street Cop training conference.
Nice.
And I get to see the seeds that I've planted for many years. And that's something I didn't anticipate seeing at the first conference. I just thought people were going to come there. We're going to do some cool shit. And all you heard was like, hey man, like, you know, I'm this because of the work that you guys do. I'm that because of the work you guys do. We change because of the work that you guys gave us guidance on things.
Yeah.
And I'm happy to report that. I think we're probably going to land in double, if not more, numbers in the first conference. You know, right now as it sits, it's March 8th. We have over 1,400 registered for that conference.
That's
law enforcement.
Awesome.
Yeah. So, yeah, dude, we get to spend a week with these men and women and continue to manicure these crops and say, like, look, we know it's tough, but it happens faster than you think. And as you climb the ladder, you are the future of change. If you care about law enforcement, you don't have to do what these other fuckheads have been doing. You can be different, and we should be different, because clearly what we're doing now is not working. And it's wild politically what they do to these folks. It's just insane. And now, you know, you got front row tickets to the dope show. And, yeah, and namely, the headlining act is California, right?
Yeah,
like
really
you guys
is,
are not saying that you know, it's so interesting. You go there and it's a beautiful place and da-da-da-da-da, right? But on the news, what they're doing politically in that state is literally the headline act at the complete idiocy of the systemic demoralization and liberalization of the United States of America. It's wild. We like, well, everybody around the country, like, dude, we don't even want to come there.
Yeah.
You're like, people are just like, you have California's convinced the rest of the world, don't come to here. As nuts as that sounds. I know people love it there, and like, I get it, it's a lot of people, but dude, I'm telling you, people don't want to come to your state. because they're just terrified.
Yeah. And for right reason, man. I mean, and here's the deal. I mean, I'm no longer a resident in where I grew up in the home state, but I'm in California a lot doing the work that I do. And, you know, there's a lot of environmental crime issues around cannabis. There's a lot of teams fighting the fight. And what people, and this is the sad part, when the politics get so jacked and they're almost, I mean, it like you said, I think lunacy is a great definition, because everything that's driving politics in California are counterproductive to protecting public safety. And they're counterproductive to wildlife resources. And that's a battle we just got to keep fighting. You know, when the people in California, especially when you get out of the cities, coast to coast, border to border, California is one of the most beautiful states, full of the most magnificent wildlife, mountain areas, places I still frequent when I'm in the Golden State, man. But I can't be a resident there and I can't buy into the political scheme, because it is literally destroying public safety and wildlife resources. And it's an atrocity, and it's an example of what not to do in the rest of the country. And hopefully people are taking heed. And what's interesting is, no matter where you sit on the political fence, liberal, conservative, left, right, pro, negative, whatever, so many people are leaving the state of California just to get out and get a fresh start at a new state. And they're seeing the errors of some previous politics they might've been part of and going, this is crazy. I didn't sign up for this, man. And I think since the last administration changed under the current presidency, when we look nationally, I think you're right. I think there's an upswing of patriotism that's translating to law enforcement, more people wanting to go into the job. The whole defund the police campaigns that went through COVID and protests, boy, what a failure that all was, right, brother? And everybody saw that. And now they're realizing, hey, I'm not really equipped to protect myself because I bought into bad politics on Second Amendment laws and preparedness, and I'm not prepared. And now when I call 911, if someone's trying to beat down my door, they might get a $20,000 bonus check for free speech and a protest, you know? And that's not an exaggeration with some of these laws that are being proposed on the West Coast. And people are fed up, which, thank God they are. And I think when you see the turnout at the conference coming up, that's amazing that so many people are coming. I think it's just going to grow and grow. And I think we are on the upswing. Like you said, more and more people are going to be interested in becoming cops. They're going to want to pay it forward. They're getting more self-prepared, because some people actually paid attention to lockdowns through COVID and all that bullshit and learned from it. And saw and started to care about the country some more. So there's so many levels of potential positives that are going to come out of this shit show. And again, I can't cite enough bad examples in my old home state. And it's sad to do that, but it has to be done, because that state could be a beautiful state. It could be run correctly. You could see a lot of exemplary policy, especially like in cannabis law and all those other laws that focus on the climate we have in California, that could be done properly or completely improperly. And right now they're being done very poorly. And I hope that switches, man. I really do. We need it to change up.
Yeah. I think that the world will never be without problems. I think this country is still obviously an amazing place to be.
It absolutely
is. I think that a lot of our declarations of opinions sometimes get inflated from the things that we see on media. And I'm certainly not discounting the fact that these politicians are completely out of their fucking minds. But what, yeah, I mean, they just are. And I mean, they're literally nuts. I just put a post up this morning and I'll actually read you the caption. So when you guys see Instagram posts, you know, that's me putting those up. So there's one, this is the DC police chief order, simple solution to get homicide rates down, keep violent people in jail. And my copy on this was, well, yeah, but common sense doesn't exist in liberal cities. The mob mentality of liberal lunatics empowers these insane people to actually believe that they make sense. It's quite interesting from a psychological standpoint. Stupid people don't know they're stupid. As crazy as it sounds, smart people with common sense. As crazy as it sounds to smart people with common sense. Side note, this chief has a lot of work to do himself. It's been reported that working at this agency is a complete nightmare. You know, let's talk about two different things, right? So now we had to defund the police. He took money away. Now you're throwing $50,000 bonuses. I was in Gatesville, Texas. I just taught there, middle of goddamn nowhere. And they said, one guy was there, goes, our agency is paying $50,000 signing bonuses if you're certified in Texas. to come on right now. $50,000 signing bonuses.
Hey guys, if you're enjoying the Street Cop podcast, do us a favor and give us a review on iTunes or Spotify, wherever you're listening to us. Tell a friend. We don't charge anything for the episodes. We appreciate your support. Check us out on any social platform by putting into the search bar Street Cop Training. Give us a follow. We have a lot of free content coming out every single day that you might not catch here on the podcast. And it's important for you to be able to do your job more professionally. And we also entertain you as well.
So these politicians and their failed politics are indirectly responsible for, and again, I'm not saying cops don't deserve it, but now the taxpayer has to forfeit $50,000 just to recruit people to protect them.
Just to keep the force going. Yeah.
And the crazy thing is there's no repercussions for the amount of lives lost at bad politics and the amount of money lost at bad politics. They're completely absolved. They're like mafia dons. You can't touch them. They're untouchable. Mayor Lori Lightfoot walks off the job now, and the first thing she blames is racism.
Right.
Like, are we forfeiting the idea that you were responsible every year for 1,000 people getting murdered? How is she not charged for her policies of no foot pursuits? You know, behind the scenes, they had a lot of feds during the Trump administration in there doing police work. So would send federal task force in to do work. She had them all removed. Because you couldn't control them. She had the Chicago police policies. Things would go down. Cops were doing work. They were catching bad guys. She caught wind of it, and she was booting them out. She'd get out of here, get out of town, making life difficult for the feds because they knew that they couldn't control it. That's what they were doing during the riots. They were sending in federal police agencies to actually control the riots, scoop these fuckers up because these, like the mayor of Seattle and all these places, they were shutting the cops down. Guys would have to go to work and just sit inside the building. They weren't able to do anything. I'm hearing from these guys. We're not allowed to go outside. They're literally kicking the doors in here. We don't even have, they took our weapons away. We don't have anything to defend ourselves.
Right.
Wild shit. Yeah.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And, you know, I've always said regardless of who's making the decisions, regardless of what political entity is in power, when you start thinking about your political gain and you start thinking about financial gain on whatever policy you're generating and public safety and environmental protection from the game warden's side that I'm near and dear and passionate about, as you know, it's just going to suffer. Actions versus words. And we've seen so much, I think, selfishness politically throughout the country, all over at the federal level, at the state level, especially from, you know, where I came from on the West Coast. And it's heartbreaking, man. It's heartbreaking. And then you see these leaders that are up and coming on the other side of the fence that are just using common sense, right? They're using common sense for, hey, this open border stuff is bullshit. We need to secure our border because we have a major criminal entity now that's spread in all 50 states doing all kinds of crimes. And it's not just environmental. It's like we talked about the drugs, the fentanyl, the meth, the trafficking. But we're just going to let that go so we can secure votes down the road and hold power in the country. I mean, if that isn't as selfish and anti-American example can get, I don't know what is. And you're right. People are starting to wake up. People on both sides of the political fence are like, I didn't sign up for this. You know, I didn't sign up for this. I had no idea this was going to happen. And, you know, these people are not delivering what was promised because those shiny words and the free money and, you know, how this country was going to be run is going right down the drain. And it has to turn around. And unfortunately, I think it's starting to. And I think we're seeing that at our conferences. I know I was just in Nashville speaking and doing seminars at Safari Club International, which is the annual big convention where Safari Club goes. And they left the West Coast, Dennis, ironically. They'd been in Vin, Reno back and forth for like 50 years. And they went to Nashville, Tennessee for the next 3 years for the first time. And I could not believe the positive response on everything patriotic, from wildlife protection to public safety to law enforcement support to military where it needs to be, to locking down and protecting our domestic inner border situation. And I've never seen a response so positive and so supportive. And that's a very patriotic organization that we always have a good conference at, that I've been doing for 15 years. And like you said, with the upcoming Street Cop training convention, probably tripling in attendance, and you're going to see more people fired up, and we're going to generate more recruitment and retention for that next generation, like you said. I'm very hopeful that this is going to turn around. And if enough people say this is bullshit, then we can get some selfless leaders that are doing the job with the country in mind first, like they're supposed to, with core values that we all share, no matter what side of the political fence we should be sitting on. then we're going to start to get some solutions. So I'm like you, I'm optimistic as well. I actually have hope. I'm not going to give up, and we're going to keep pushing, you know, air this stuff out, bring some awareness to it, and hopefully we can initiate some change that way. And I think we're on the right path.
I think everyone is just too comfortable. And
yeah,
you know, I hate to say it, but if you would like to see patriotism at its finest and people really start to throw these lunatic politicians to the wayside, let's get in some conflict with another country and then bring it to the American soil. And again, I don't know if what's going on with these other countries is a real thing. I have no idea. All we can do is merely speculate on the things that we see that the media shows us. So, you know, who knows what the real story is? I don't know. I'm not going to sit here and say what it might be, but drop a little conflict. And there's some real threats going on. And I want to talk about, you let it come to this country. You let it come to this country in some full force. All things are going to change, ladies and gentlemen. And this will be a shift in how the country sees things. And unfortunately, as sad as this is, the last time I saw real patriotism where there was no talk about anybody being liberal one bit was 9/11.
Yeah, that was it. And that was the time when I think I saw the country most unified since World War II. And I wasn't born yet, but I had relatives that fought in World War II. And then I had, you know, on my dad's side, Vietnam. And then, but we haven't had a domestic conflict on our borders since the Civil War a long time ago. And I think we've gotten so many generations removed, to your point, we are too comfortable. People have gotten so comfortable having so much in this amazing country that we really seriously take it for granted.
You're spoiled.
And what was the analogy that you hear from, you know, the United States is a superpower with all these opportunities, the best country on the planet, just because of the blessings we're afforded, even currently. And we think of the Roman Empire. Where'd Rome go? About 300 years, right? They were dominating. They had the world by the hand. They had technology, and then they had comfort. And then they eroded within what, a 50-100 year period after a 300 year reign, basically. And we're coming up on that as a new country. We're getting to that point, that three century window where we've been removed from what it took to get here and who suffered to get here, right? With our founding fathers. And if you haven't been in the trenches and served either in conflict in the military or in law enforcement or whatever, and this isn't like, oh, you know, we know and you don't. That's not what I'm saying here. But I think what you said made 100%. We are too comfortable. And the reason we're too comfortable is because people have busted their asses above us, behind us, previous generations to afford what we've got. And I'm, you know, seeing sound bites and talking to military veterans that are the last of the baby boomers, the last of the World War II generation. And they're all passing now, you know, the guys that have made it, you know, into their 90s, and they're teary eyed saying, I can't believe this is our country. After what we did in Normandy, after what we did overseas, after the men and boys that were 19, 20 years old, my brothers that we lost, the shit we saw and the stuff we did, and they're just crying their eyes out in total shame of what our nation has become, because we have short memories, man, as people. And we definitely have short memories when we have it so good in a superpower like America. And right now, we're not far off from having that conflict you're talking about. Rather, it's a domestic conflict with these cartels running with impunity in the country, or heaven forbid, we have a foreign invader, whatever that lays out with the geopolitical climate right now. But we're vulnerable given how we're set up right now. We're definitely vulnerable. And I think the next couple of years are going to make or break us if that conflict's going to happen. But we are here because of our comfort and our arrogance, quite honestly. We are in this position right now because we have not suffered enough recently to know that this is a national priority to secure this country, protect this country, and appreciate this country if you're here. Man, nothing's for free. No free handouts, right? Nothing's for free. You were a grinder starting out. I've been grinding since day one, and I wouldn't have it any other way. And I feel very blessed and fortunate to still be right where we are in the United States of America, man. And it is heartbreaking to see the change. And I hope it does not go in the worst situation, which has a potential.
Again, just to speak to the other side of that, I also, you know, I'm somebody who has a positive mindset. I still think that there are wonderful people, and I'm hoping that the wonderful people in the country, which makes up way more than half, will continue to not be silent, raise their voices, stand up, and not accept what's being just handed to you. And we have a good shot because the world is a beautiful place. But these are some serious things that we have to talk about on the front of law enforcement. We see it. How new is this stuff? I don't know. You know, it's interesting to even begin to ponder, because I think what's happened is the internet has just brought it all to the light. You see so much more of the things that have been going on for eternities and centuries, and people even, we'll just take our little portion here of, oh, my agency's terrible. These agencies are terrible. My supervisors are terrible. Yeah, it's been that way for a long time. Sometimes, John, I look at these old pictures. You ever see these old pictures, like the picture they took of like 1940? It's the chief, the sergeant. Like they're all like some steps. They look like the chief's got the fucking, got like his belt on, like right under his breast line, you know? Oh, no gun on, right? Just a big, fat, old fucking dude. And I'm like, man, you know how bad it was back then, you know?
Yeah.
Right? Actually, it was the same shit. These guys are miserable. They're doing a job. This guy's an asshole, you know? But also bringing things to light is there's a lot of hope. I put a post up the other day about, it was a slide deck about how to know when you're at a good agency. And people are like, oh, where's this unicorn? It was really relieving to see a lot of people showing up and saying, like, you should look at our Instagram post on that. It's really cool. But people wrote, like, yeah, this is where I work, man. Like, these places exist. One girl wrote, I had a domestic, was into my shift. My chief and deputy chief went out to handle it and told me go home. My sheriff heard the call come out and he took the job for me because he knew I had somewhere to be the next day. Like, and we're so there are these places out there. I think that you just get so jaded because you're in your own environment of just getting your butt kicked nonstop. But dude, I travel the country. I meet a lot of people and a lot of sheriffs and a lot of chiefs who are amazing. And they're actually in the same fight that we're in. And I've had these guys, I sit down meetings, 3-4 these guys having dinner with them, and they're big shots. And but they're us. They're just like us, John. And they say to me, like, you know, like, yeah, we try to talk to these other fucking chiefs. They're gone. Like, it's like talking to a fucking wall. These guys are clueless.
Yeah.
And these are some of your big players in the game. They're like, half these fucking guys at these fucking meetings, it's all about whose dick's bigger than each other, stroking each other's egos, telling each other how great we are. You know, recently I went to SHOT Show to promote our conference for vendors, essentially. Because I think that a lot of vendors didn't know that we existed. And, you know, a lot of vendors were like, is this like the IACP? And I'm like, and that's the International Chiefs of Police, ICAP. Like, are you guys like this conference? And I went, no, there's nothing. I've never been to it, but no, that's not what it's about. That's not what our conference is like. Right. I get what's going on there. They go, we're not, believe it or not, as crazy as it sounds, those guys aren't there. They're not the shot callers, as nuts as it sounds. They're not the ones who are buying our products.
Right.
They're not the ones who are running the SWAT teams and looking at the new M4s and the new technology. And,
exactly.
And they're not the ones making those collective decisions that appeal to us as vendors. So we want to be at a place where your lieutenants, your captains, your sergeants, even your patrolmen are at, that are the hard chargers that want to use this new technology that we have. Because they just got to sell it to the bosses that we see. But that at that event, I heard this over and over again, John, at that event, those bosses have no interest in looking at our new technology for the most part. I'm sure there's some that do.
Right.
So I said, no, that's not what this is about. This is not a networking event. This is about 5 days of seeing what's new out there, meeting people who are just like you, who actually care about this job.
Yep.
And then our instructors on stage are going to give you practical knowledge that you can employ immediately when you get back to your police department. Things that'll change the way you do shit. And then we have the keynote speakers that people want to hear from, and they want to be reminding everybody of how much we appreciate you. You know, so we have some really great people coming out that are American heroes, and I don't think any of them are not American heroes, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah, no, it's spot on. And I think the thing I see too, Dennis, working with administrators and agency heads, myself nationwide, and being able to talk freely, you know, in the retirement phase and being out of agency, is there is a lot of hope. And there are a lot of leaders, like I mentioned previously in my examples, that came from our background. They have, you know, our safety in mind, the public safety in mind. They want to give us the best equipment. They want to take care of us, and they still have the hunger because they're still freaking, you know, they're nothing but warriors inside, and they want to go. They're call, like you said, that sheriff and deputy sheriff out there taking a call because his shift and his squad was just wiped out. They were on what, maybe a 2-day bender, and now they're on this heavy call. There's those folks out there, you know, and there's a lot of them. And I see them all over the East Coast on some of the chiefs we've interviewed for our Thin Green Line and Warden's Watch podcast. There's the old leaders, you know, from California that I came up and under that are no longer chief heads, but they're instructing other agencies as well. They're going to other country motivating. And that's just the people you need to see doing this. And we're going to see more of it. We're going to see more of it. And the agencies are going to benefit as this shift starts to change, as we see more people wanting to come back into law enforcement, you know, for all the right reasons. But it is a positive vibe right now. And it gives me more hope than not right now, for sure.
So just a few things. I do think that as kind of unfortunate as this may be, I think once we have this economic collapse, which it's inevitable. I mean, the writing's on the wall.
Yeah.
No, it's actually here. There's a lot of, so I have friends in the business world, and I forgot, somebody told me recently how many repos are up now. They're up like 700%, the repo on cars.
Yep.
So that's, it's here. All the early warning signs are going off. It's all occurring. But also, you could look at California as one example of law enforcement and who you're drawing to that state, which is nobody. And then you can shift focus to the other end of the spectrum in Florida. Now, I'm not saying Florida doesn't have their problems in law enforcement. I'm not saying they don't have their share fair of people that shouldn't be bosses there. But
right,
you'll have a collective database of maybe 9 to 15 sheriffs that literally have no problem saying, we don't care what you think. This is our top priority. This is what we're going to do. We're addressing things. Wayne Ivey's one of them. He's going to be speaking at our conference this year. But you got Grady Judd, and you got Carmine Marcino from Lee County. All these guys are saying what they say publicly, and they're actually in a time when there is a real concern with recruitment. You got some of these agencies that you can't even get into. And they don't pay what other agencies pay. They just display what everybody wants to work for. So we look at that and we say, well, how come they're allowed to say that? Because their governor gives support to law enforcement. He's had enough as well. DeSantis is a prime example of, I don't know DeSantis politics, but clearly he is an outspoken advocate of law enforcement. So you've got people, I think they're getting like 1,300 to 1,400 new residents a day in Florida.
Yeah,
you got cops in Jersey, dude. I'm not bullshitting you.
Yeah, true story.
Leaving here, one of the most highly paid states, if not the most highly paid state, I'm imagining right next to California. We're all in the same group there. It's high six-figure salaries here.
Yeah.
Bro, leaving? I just had a friend of mine leave 2 weeks ago. He's gone. Yeah. 10 years on the job here. Young guy. He would have been done another 15. He's like, nah, I want to go be the police. I want to go down to more opportunity. And they want that support from their governor. They want that support. Where in a state like this, people are they're nervous, you know?
Yeah, big time. And you know, DeSantis is a great example of good leadership, supporting his cops, supporting his public, and his public as a counter are completely supporting him. They don't want him to leave. They don't want him to run for president. Selfishly, they want to keep him as the Florida governor. I have relatives that live in Florida, a lot of friends that live in Florida. We have that vibe in Montana as well, Dennis, and you see it in Texas. And even though you may have a lot of crimes and stuff going on right there on the border necessarily in Texas, you still have overall some great leadership, a big support for agencies, a lot of technology, a lot of recruitment, a lot of diversity with the state troopers in Texas, with the game wardens in Texas being very progressive. It is encouraging to see. There are examples of phenomenal public safety leadership out there for the public and for our law enforcement officers in every branch. They're just not everywhere yet, you know, and that's what we need to see more of. And it's sad when a beautiful state like California that has so many resources and could be an example for not only the country, but the world, given the potential of the economy, the Mediterranean climate there, the diversity there, just what bad politics and bad leadership can do. It shows you exactly the negative, right? Everyone's going to leave. Inflation, economic collapse, safety issues, all that there. And yet Florida is just as big, if not bigger. The population is growing leaps and bounds, as you just said. We're having a flood of increase in population in, you know, the western mountain state of Montana. But leadership is strong. Leadership is being sensible. Leadership is being really smart with policies of how we're going to manage an influx of people, how we're going to increase our law enforcement presence and our agency size to reflect good public safety, and how the people just respond to us in law enforcement. It's such a positive vibe. Who would not want to be a cop there, you know, if you had that drive? And that's what we just need to see more of. And it's going to have to happen from the top in these states that are turning people away.
Think about this. Not only are they getting our people, they're getting our best people. You're getting people who are motivated to be police. People who go into Florida and Texas, they're the guys and girls from here that are fed up with being told they can't do work.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding you. And they're literally going, and by the way, Texas is awesome. What a great state. I fucking love that state.
Love that state.
Oh, it's a great state, dude. It's a really very, very unique place. I'm a little bit more of a northern Texas guy myself. I like the Dallas-Fort Worth area only because, like, I'm still very Jersey, and it's still got that trendy fucking vibe to it.
Yeah.
Nightclubs and stuff like that. But that's who you're getting. Actually, as I think about it now, every cop that I know personally that went to Texas and Florida recently, they're the ones who are the hard chargers. They want to go get after it. And the crazy thing is, if you look at a state like Florida, they have no state income tax.
Right.
But they actually don't need it. They're taking your taxpayer dollars. This is a smart politics. And they have now grown the population in Florida, especially on the back end of the long tail of the internet, now making location something that's not optimal anymore because you have technology.
Yeah.
You have the right weather. You've got the right people, and they just keep flocking to the same place. So state economics in Florida are probably thriving through the roof on smart politics to show support for the things that make the most sense. So while you might want to try to gain support of these people who are anti-cop, you're destroying these states. And people are fucking leaving. Again, are there 18 million people fleeing the state of California today? No, but you know, you look at it overall, how many people and taxpayer money you've lost and what it costs the people who have stayed. It's wild, man. It's flabbergasting.
It is. It's crazy. And it's a good model that if you manage a state properly with good politics, you don't have to tax people, you know, an arm and a leg and through the roof. Where I'm at in Montana, we have an income tax, but it's about 2/3 of what California is, but we don't have a sales tax, you know, and you see that state being managed very correctly. And you look at everything from hunting regulations and, you know, cost of living being moderated and overall public safety very good. Texas the same way. And you're right. Florida is a good example. The other state that impresses me that I've been spending more and more time in for work and for play is Tennessee, another income tax state that's wired very patriotic. They're a very pro 2A state. They have a game warden force. The Tennessee game wardens, man, are good dudes. Those state troopers are good dudes. We had the NOIA conference in Nashville last year, which is the National Game Wardens Conference for game wardens from the US and Canada. So it's our annual big event. But we had state troopers there, and Tennessee was kind of on hold for 3 years with COVID to host it. But man, did they do one of the best jobs I've ever seen. And then again, when I mentioned SCI being in Nashville, the vibe in Nashville, just because it's the state of Tennessee and it's that part of the country and so close to Florida, it's a real good thing when you get real good leaders that are wired right, managing the money. And it's amazing how efficient that state works, right? And how much morale is good on the public side and the law enforcement side if these politics aren't tax heavy because they're failing in other areas. You know, it's really a no-brainer. It's common sense. If you just manage it right, you just have to have the right head doing it.
Unfortunately, you know, it's clear as day that these people who are in charge in a lot of these places have no business being in charge. And that's the one thing in politics and public services. You know, it's, you can go to a building, knock on the door and say, who's the dumbest shit here?
Yeah.
And they go, yeah, go three floors up, the top guy here. It's wild. So, and you might say, who's the smartest guy here? And they go, you're on the first floor. He's the guy down in the hole in the cubby. He's the smartest guy here, but he'll never have a shot at going up there because that's not how this works. And as a guy who's in business and understands, you know, how business works, why some succeed, why most don't, it's very clear that it has to do with a you can practice at this, but there's inherently some skills I think that you're born with or you develop over the years.
Sure.
Intelligence yeah. plays a part in it. There's no question about it. But real problem solving is a big skill for somebody who's going to be successful in business. There are not many people who are successful in business compared to the rest of the world. And true. I'm not saying that because I am and other people aren't. I'm saying there's a reason why. It's scientific, to be quite honest with you.
Sure.
Maybe with a sprinkle and a dash of socioeconomic, socialism, how you grew up, your perspective, your education, things like that. They're a little bit of a variable as well. When you talk about why things aren't getting better, because you have people who don't know how to make them better. They don't know what to do. They right. just want to self-serve. They don't know what to do or hook their boys up.
Yeah.
So much shit around politics is get me elected. I'll ensure that your permits get passed for your next building.
Yeah.
That's the whole, that's most of the game, right?
That is the game. And again, you said it spot on. When our leaders are thinking about themselves and their personal gain, and they're not putting their public, they're not putting their city, they're not putting their state, their country first, and thinking big picture, right? And not just what can I do right now to solve this problem or put a Band-Aid on the cancer and not go deep. It's a failed state. It's a failed system. It's a failed business. And collectively, I'm going to mention both of it. I think where we've been successful is one, we've always not taken anything for granted. We've always worked hard. We've generated very good relationships by being honest, by being supportive, by being, sacrificing our comfort. That's how I was raised. You know, I had two parents that were grinders their whole lives and parents, and, you know, I wouldn't trade that for the world. But I think that mindset and being able to think ahead and not being able to look right at your feet and say what's good for me right this second and not take five steps down the road for the big picture. That's why these states are failing, because it gets to the core of the leadership mindset and it's about themselves, just like you said, Dennis, and that was spot on. And I don't think you have that in Florida. You definitely don't. You don't have it in Montana. You don't have it in Texas. You don't have it in Tennessee, because the public, one, I don't think would allow it. And two, those are examples of states that the leadership has gravitated with good core leaders that have common sense, that have worked hard. And that's why they're successful in their business, albeit running a government. You and I both know our best law enforcement leaders, that the handful that I really admire, respect, and call my heroes, and there's a handful of them that I was either under in California Department of Fish and Wildlife or other police agencies or military groups, they always led from the front, man. They always led from the front and they came from the ground up, and they were always selfless and they always had time to listen. And I just don't think, if you're not wired that way and you're into your own world and you're about your self gain, you're not listening to anybody, you know, and I think you're destined to failure. And it's just, it's a common sense thing about relationships and how we're wired. And fortunately there's a lot of good wired Americans. And I think it's more than half, like you said, that are going to help make a difference down the road.
John, before we get off, let's talk about the new book.
The new book. Well, guys, we're sitting on the second edition of Hidden War, if it's going to show up there. It's a second printing because we sold out of the first copy of the first edition hardcover, Dennis, that you've got. So we wanted to do not only a second printing that we needed to do in a trade paperback, but we wanted a second edition with some updates. So we had a new foreword written by my friend Jack Carr, who, not only being a military veteran in the SEAL teams, is a devout hardcore conservationist on wildlife protection and a hunter himself. And he wrote a beautiful foreword. I completely changed the introduction and updated all the material in the beginning of the book to take everybody through what I've been seeing and doing throughout the country and what has shifted on the Hidden War front of the cartel threats throughout America since the first book was published in 2019. And 4 months after publication of Hidden War One, as you know, we had the COVID pandemic, we had lockdowns, we had a border policy change, we had a presidential change, and everything shifted on these cartels. And we're going to go into that. But you still get all the original mission chapters of the development of the team, the canine teams we developed, the sniper units, fighting the cartels fist to cuff here in California, and how it's branched out into other states. And yeah, it's been out for about a month and we're having good sales. And more importantly, we're getting a lot more awareness on the Hidden War throughout America. And I'm grateful for you being part of that message with all the good work you're doing. And copies are available on Amazon, in Kindle, in print, in Audible. And if people want personalized copies, which I'm doing a lot of personalized package orders, just go through my website, www.johnnorris.com, johnnorris.com. You'll get to my email and I'll set people up on personalized copies as needed. And as you know, I'm on Instagram at John Norris, and on Facebook at John Norris as well. And yeah, we're just going to keep pushing the message, and we're speaking about the new book's content all over the country at conferences. I've got a law enforcement writers conference coming up in June in Wisconsin, where we're going to highlight it. We just did it at SCI, and some more stuff on the brew if anybody wants to hear more about it. We're certainly open for bookings on that as well. And I appreciate your support, brother, and everybody out there.
Yeah, for sure. Fuck, I have one more thing to say, and I just lost it. This is the detriment of attention deficit disorder. It's a dude, it's a superpower, bro. It's so funny. I went to this business event last week, and it was like 65 guys in the room. They're all super successful, and everybody's like, thank God I have ADHD. But the problem is as great as it is, sometimes it's this, and I completely forgot the fuck I was going to say. So it is what it is. John Norris, you're the fucking man. Oh, well, no, here's what I had. It just came back. This is your typical ADHD.
Yeah, I love when you save it, though, and find it. This is good. I can't wait to hear this.
Oh, it's always here. It's just it goes off into the fucking universe, and they're like boomerang thoughts. They just come back out of nowhere. You're like, oh, shit, what's that? Oh, it was a thing from 3 days ago. There it is again. They never leave. They just disappear for a while.
Right.
And is that show still able to be watched, like, on demand or anything like that, the one you were on?
Man, this is sad. I heard this all over Nashville last week, man, at SCI. People coming up to me like, dude, we miss Wild Justice. We can't even get reruns on Nat Geo. There's a couple online you can see on the Nat Geo website. It's like little clips. They have not regurgitated it. We keep pressuring them to do so. The one thing they have allowed is on my YouTube channel, just go to the John Norris Thin Green Line YouTube channel. A lot of those, what they call A-list stories, I was able to share on my YouTube channel. And Nat Geo's authorizing that, so you can watch them on my YouTube channel. Not every episode, but you can see some highlight stories from the three seasons, some of the more intense stories. But we're trying to get Nat Geo to do something with it, or even another production entity to buy those and re-release them, because people want to see them. We only did three seasons, and that was by agency choice. It was the number one hit show on National Geographic, tied with Border Wars back in the day. They wanted to do seasons 4 to 6, sight unseen, and between our chief, Nancy Foley at the time, Patrick Foy, who was our press information captain and a guy wired really, really correctly, we had had a lot of popularity from the show, but we had no editing control. So we opened ourselves up to a lot of liability. We didn't get enough conservation, you know, passing on the tradition stories, and we elected not to keep doing the show for that reason. Now, you mentioned Northwoods Law, Dennis, and you'll find this interesting, but my co-host Wayne Saunders, and he co-hosts, we co-host together the Warden's Watch podcast and the Thin Green Line podcast. He, being from New Hampshire, is a veteran of Northwoods Law. Chris McCabe, a good friend from Maine, is in the Northwoods Law channels. And the Northwoods Law show has gone for like a decade, and it's thriving because their chiefs and their wardens can control the content. They can look at the edit, make sure there's nothing that's going to open their officers up to liability or the public. They can control some content. They diversify. So they keep thriving with that show, appropriately so. And that's the only reason we did not continue with Wild Justice beyond three seasons. But I can say this, brother, the three seasons of stuff we captured was flipping mind-blowing, especially because that was just before we formed up the official, you know, MET team to fight these cartels on the cannabis front. But we were doing that with Sheriff's Office, with all the tactical operations. And for the public and the world to see that for the first time, of game wardens, you know, hoisting out of Black Hawk helicopters and going in with the, you know, Belgian Malinois and going after these guys, it was mind-blowing to see that level of environmental crime from cartels inside the forest of freaking California, of all places, in the Silicon Valley foothills. So we're trying to get it back, but go to my YouTube channel to watch the episodes that are there, and I'll keep you posted and everybody else as we hopefully make headway with Nat Geo to make those things available on a bigger forum, for sure.
Rock and roll, brother. It's great seeing you, John.
You too. I will stay in touch. I'll see you when I'm back east, bud, and look forward to seeing you again.
Sounds good. Guys, if you're in an area where you're trying to get to our classes, but we're not close to you, fret not. We actually have on-demand training at StreetCop.com. You can take that course online right now, and then you could attend that training in the future at no additional cost. You can redeem your voucher, so you get two for the price of one. We don't want to deny you the ability to take this training now, especially knowing that it can keep you safe, at a very minimum, putting bad guys in jail where they belong, and at the maximum, going home to your family. Check out streetcop.com for that offer.